Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Stone Cold Shots. It's the professional wrestling podcast where the shots are cold and the takes are hot. Every episode here, every couple of weeks here, we like to review, rate, recap a professional wrestling pape or a pay-per-view. This week, it's the end of... Unfortunately, it is the end of summer. I hate that. I fucking hate... As soon as like Labor Day hits and everyone's like, it's fall now. And I'm like, no, it's not. We got another 20 days. You shut your dirty mouth. But we're here. We are in the truly the doggest days of summer. So we're doing a little pape kind of based on that, but not really. But why don't you guys introduce yourselves? Tell the Stone Cold Shots universe who you are. Tell them your name. Tell them how did you spend your summer vacation?
Holy smokes, how did I spend my summer vacation? You guys had summer vacations? Well, this is the internet darling, Josh Felix Pryor. Maybe aged a little bit. Maybe I hit a milestone in the old life ski. You know, not to put it on blast or anything like that, but your boy has gracefully left his 30s and...
Happy birthday to you.
Well, disclosure, the gang at the podcast crew here, Gwinnett, last night got a little fucking torn up, you know?
A little drunk ski.
So it's a little bit of a rough ski day today. But, So just been hanging out, getting old, and that's pretty much it. Watching a lot of wrestling.
Hell yeah.
Sounds sick. Sounds like a good life.
It's not too bad. Not too bad, buddy.
My name is Lauren. I'm a regular darling.
Yay!
Yeah! I'm trying to think. Like, for summer vacation, I think we went to Montreal at one point. We did a lot of hanging hard all summer long. A lot of socializing, Campbell and I. And, I went to Stratford and hung out with my mom and saw a bunch of plays, one of which was Shakespearean. The rest were not.
Okay.
One Moliere, one just plain old Chicago. One
Chicogan.
One just a musical theater bit there. Had a whale of a time.
now, Campbell, I think your story should be quite similar, but...
Yeah,
if there's anything different, please elaborate. Host,
I'm nobody's darling. I'm Campbell Falconer.
Boo.
And I really wasn't thinking this through when I asked the question. I just thought I wanted to do a cute little back to school essay, you know, how I spent my summer vacation. I thought that'd be a funny bit. And then I realized two of us, we're going to have the exact same answer.
But you have less culture. You didn't come to Stratford and see culture.
I didn't go to Stratford. I think the musical Chicago should be updated to have one scene where somebody eats a wet beef sandwich. I think it's about time to recognize that culinary cultural institution of the fine city of Chicago.
Somebody's been watching that goddamn butcher show. What's it called?
The Bear.
The Bear, yeah. Somebody's got that on the mind, huh?
great show. My buddy worked on that show. Shout out to Eric. So we were thinking, end of the summer, we wanted to do a little ECW heat wave, and then we realized we already did the best ECW heat wave, so we're just jumping around to a different ECW. Josh, you picked Barely Legal in 1997. Why that?
Well, I was barely legal in 1997. I think I was 15 years
old. Ooga!
Hey, ooga! This is the first ECW pay-per-view. I thought this would be a fun one for the crew to cover. I think we've been a little selective, a little handpicky with, the best and the worst kind of the pay-per-views. So might as well. We've done the best. We've done the worst. Why not do the first, you know?
you watched this in 1997? You young Josh Felix Pryor, sat down. You were glued to the TV?
No. This is before my time. I think the first ECW pay-per-view I saw was in 99, I want to say.
Okay.
But, you know...
Fully
this is
legal.
I was partially legal then. in Gatineau, I think
legal
I was legal.
Legal in Canada.
Yeah. In Quebec, I was legal. I think I could get into some bars there. But yeah, like, really, like, around this time, like, ECW was more mythical, right? It was this, like, cool underground, you know, I'd go on my wrestling website, which was lordsofpain.net, and that's where I got all the wrestling news and updates, and I'd read this column called Mr. Tito's Fat Daily Column, and he'd do these reviews on, you know, the different wrestling shows, and, like, it was always, like, ECW is just, like, again, like, this just, like, I was just imagining this cool, like, kind of, like, underground fight club at the time. You know, it was, like, counterculture, and it was like, oh, man. So we tried to get, like, bootleg tapes of, like, ECW shows, and, yeah, like, you know, I tried to watch or consume whatever I could, but the internet was so shit back then that, you know, it was a little tough to get your hands on, but it wasn't until years later when I actually saw this.
Yeah. I fucking love hearing about, like, internet wrestling culture. I guess just, like, internet culture before just kind of, like, the real boom of the internet.
Like forums and online communities.
Forums versus... Because now, the forum doesn't exist anymore. It's all social media. Even shit that used to be based on forums, like fucking, like, Reddit. If you go on Reddit on, like, you know, you go to r/circle or wrestling or whatever, and it's still, like, there is an element of social media as you can fucking... you know, give people awards and you can friend people and shit. And it's like hearing this, like, rough and tumble Wild West Tito's Fat Daily Column, that shit, I love that. I like,
it was special. Everything was so special back then, because it's like, if you got to see a clip and like, you like, even like the theme songs of the wrestlers, right? Like the ECW wrestlers, I thought it was so cool that they had like real music as theme songs, right? So it's like you go to like a like a Windows media file of like like their music, or a really shitty like you know, 8-bit song version of it. Like, you're trying to consume whatever you could, and like, it was bigger than life, right? And I think, you know, there's something to be said about like, everything's just so accessible now, either through like the wrestlers on social media, or you know, if you want to watch anything, it's on YouTube, or you can get it. We can get any piece of media, any piece of wrestling media within a matter of minutes after it's done, right? Back then, it was a big process. And again, in the forums and everybody opining about like, you know, whoa, who's going to show up where, and like, nobody knew shit. Yeah. And it was a lot of fun, right?
Now you have like fucking people leaking to dirt sheets. They're like, oh, Orange Cassidy's changing his music. It's like, why would you leak that? Who cares? Let one fucking thing happen organically for once, right? Like, I just want to turn on the TV and be surprised and not be like inundated with like any social media that I go on, because the algorithm knows that I will just engage like a fucking rat with a button on anything that says wrestling on it. Is just like nothing is surprising anymore. And I do that idea of like, you would read about a match happening and then like have to find like a fucking bootleg tape from some guy and have to wait for it to show up in the mail. I feel like it sounds like, and I think that's kind of like, we'll get into talking about this, but like the nostalgia of ECW. And I think the biggest thing for me every time we do watch ECW is like, is it that good? The way that people build it up, the way that people talk about it, does it hold up under a modern lens? Can I put myself in a mindset where I am engaged with this the way that somebody would have been engaged with this in 1997 or 1999? And I think that part of it, I do think there is a little bit of a nostalgia factor of like, the first time you watched this, you had to wait for a fucking illegal tape to show up to your house in a package.
Or you had to fucking find it, like a little like detective or like librarian, basically, like an information expert on that subject.
And so it seems like a thing where it's like, even if like all this has to do basically in the 90s, all this has to do is be passably good for all of that work to be its own reward. And whereas now.
Yeah, it was so different. I think the thing is, it's like, oh, this is like punk rock wrestling almost. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, this is like, I'm part of something. I'm part of this elite underground group. And like, you know, it's like almost like a secret handshake to kind of get into the club. It's like, oh, did you hear about Sandman? And like, you
know. I'm a friend of Sandman.
We are connected, brother. Like, some weird thumb locked in handshake.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So but it's like now because there's so much fucking wrestling out there and because it's all so easily accessible, every single thing has to be the best all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I would argue that like almost any episode of AEW Dynamite has probably been overall better quality than sort of the gestalt of this pay-per-view.
Totally, right? Like, and
but I think people, you know, if it's not like insanely good every time, people are like, oh, this is it. The company's gonna fold. I knew it. Vince was right all along. Like, fucking.
It was gritty, right? And it was like, and like introducing acts from just not North America, right? And like WWF at the time and WCW. And this is before like the Luchadors came in to WCW. So like all of this stuff in ECW was like so cool with like the Cruiserweights, the Luchadors, the contingency from Japan that came over at one point, you know, like, you know, Mike Awesome and Tanaka like came over and like, it was just like, it was really cool. Like kind of like, and like, you know, back in those days, you didn't see anybody going through tables and you didn't see chair shots. So this is all really super like, novel and new and like as this new thing, you know with 2020 hindsight, it's like, yeah, that was cool at the time, but like we're so spoiled now as wrestling fans because of the quality of wrestling, because you can turn on like AEW, even WWE, and like a lot of people get bored of WWE, but there's still like really good quality wrestling on there that would eclipse, you know, what was going on back then. So it's interesting. It's always fun for me to go back and watch this stuff and just like see how engaged the crowd was, like their chants that they all had. It was part of a group, right?
I would say like for me, thinking about ECW versus current day, like I feel like, I mean, this might be an oversimplification, but I feel like the emphasis in the ECW era was on for wrestlers to have charisma. And if they had fantastic wrestling ability, that was a bonus. Like clearly RVD is like a bonus. He's just like fantastic and doing like a whole different style of wrestling. Mm-hmm. But nowadays the emphasis is more on the wrestling ability. And it seems like charisma is obviously important, but I think it's less important than your in-ring ability in a lot of ways, hence why fucking Dax Harwood and fucking, what are they called?
FTR.
They have absolutely zero charisma, but they have fantastic in-ring ability, and people love them for that. And I feel like that's like sort of one example of the emphasis now is like, we want to see wow, spectacle wrestling. Obviously, we care about storyline. Obviously, we care about charisma and character and all of that too, but I think the wrestling in-ring storytelling, in-ring ability is more on the forefront. That's just like the taste of the time.
Why don't we get into the show? So this is actually the first thing I wanted to ask before we get into the show. This is the first pay-per-view, right? How long had ECW been running shows before this point? Like a couple years? Like,
yeah, I think so. Like Eastern Championship Wrestling, I think it was probably around, I want to say it was a year or two before that, right? Like it was around that kind of like time zone. I think it was maybe like, yeah, like 96 or, yeah, I think it was 96. Don't quote
and
me on
so
that,
is the idea that it's like Eastern Championship Wrestling already had a TV deal that like Extreme Championship Wrestling just kind of like was like, yeah, we're still, you know, quote unquote the same company, whatever. They were still running like TV, or was it like ECW was just running like untelevised local shit first and then got a TV show and then made it to pay-per-view? Grew?
So infamously, like Shane Douglas won the NWA title and threw it down.
Yep.
Right. And then denounced the NWA and said the ECW championship is the only championship I recognize, yada yada yada, this is a symbol of excellence. I think around that time they did have some local TV, and they had TV in like kind of centralized areas, right? So I think they were on the Madison Square Garden network, and I think there was a couple other kind of local providers that carried them. But yeah, the switch actually happened, and Paul Heyman, you know, amped it up later and eventually got a deal with TNN, I think around 98 or 99.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was 99 that he got the TNN
cool.
deal.
Okay. So, this is a thing where it's like, it's rewarding as like, if you've been following ECW for a while, this is like a moment, right? As opposed to, well, because now it's like, it's funny. It's like, if you look at kind of AEW as the most recent, like major wrestling promotion, they did it backwards, right? Like they did a pay-per-view first, and then they did like another pay-per-view, and then they got a TV deal, right?
Yeah.
Which is like, again, just like an internet thing where it's like, it's easier to do like a one-time, like, fucking Ric Flair's last show on iPay-per-view or whatever, throw that out there. You don't have to have a television following. You can just kind of do whatever. So I thought this was interesting, just the history of like how this grew and what the industry was at that point. It was like just kind of cool to note on. We start off first match. We've got the Dudleys versus the Eliminators. We get the Dudleys coming out first, and Devon cuts a little promo.
The crowd does not like them.
The Dudleys were, back in the ECW days, like, the best heels in the business, and it wasn't even close. Like, that's why I fell in love with the Dudleys back then, right? And then their whole act with, like, Joel Gertner, Sign Guy Dudley, Big Dick Dudley, the whole Dudley family, like, it was just, it was such a big act, and it felt so big because the ring would be full of people. You know, Devon be running around hitting the ropes, and like, you know, like Joel Gertner would be cutting this, like, you know, gross promo, and then like, and then Bubba would get the mic and just eviscerate the crowd, and it was like white hot heat. Like, it was like he was so masterful in getting that crowd enraged. It was a piece of art back in the day. We didn't get so much of that. This one, it was like a nice kind of Dudley roots of what we'd see in the future promo, but it was pretty interesting to see.
I was gonna say this was relatively tame compared to some of the Dudley shit that I've seen.
Yeah.
But it's just the structuring of this I thought was crazy, where it's like Dudley's come out, Devon cuts a promo, we get a video package for ECW, which kicked ass. Great video package. It got me very hyped for the show. We come back from the video package and Joel Gertner cuts a promo, and then the Eliminators hit the ring. And so the Eliminators is Perry Saturn and
John
Kronos.
Kronos.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kronos. And then, the Dudley's powder, Sign Guy gets hit with the high low combination, and then kind of your match starts, right?
They hit him with the total elimination, Campbell.
Sure.
Oh.
How do we feel about, like, so, yeah, kind of convoluted start to what's going on, but, like, definitely sort of gave a feel. Like, very anarchic, very just, like, we're gonna have three guys cut promos with, like, a video package in between, and then these guys are going to fucking beat the shit out of somebody who's not in the match at all, and then the match is going to start. And it's, like, it gets you, you're ready to go, right?
Yeah, ECW's always been really good with the hotshot starts. It's like either like somebody runs out at the end of a match and then like they get beat up and somebody else runs out to save, and then like they'll just start the match, right? Like that's a very ECW hotshot start of a match. This is, it's neat to see kind of like the Dudleys back in the day before they got like kind of big with the WWE and have their run and all that stuff. And, you know, Perry Saturn and Kronos, like they're really good. Like, it was pretty neat to see, especially for the size of them back in the day.
They are really good. I have no idea who they are, but, like, I don't recall ever seeing either of them before, but, like, maybe I have.
Perry Saturn came in to the WWE with the Radicals, so Benoit, Guerrero, Malenko, and Saturn all came in together.
So the listeners will know if we've covered that before. I don't know.
I think the only Perry Saturn match that we've covered before was we watched a WCW pay-per-view where he fought Goldberg.
I have no recollection of this. But the Eliminators were fantastic.
Yeah.
They were really great together. I I really like their pink satin undies that they're wearing. It's very boudoir, very sexy look, but like they have a lot of high energy, sort of like high flying-ish moves. I don't know. I hesitate to say high flying in like in comparison to some of the wrestling we'll see later, but yeah. Like very big moves, you know, like doing moonsaults.
Yeah.
Flipping off of the ropes and shit, you know, it's sick. The Dudleys are also wearing a great look. They've got tie-dye t-shirts under some black overalls. It's just a good look. It's kind of my look that I rock all the time. And yeah, I don't have a lot to say about this match other than I thought it was great. I thought it was really good, but the Eliminators sort of win without any kind of big lead into the win. Like they just kind of win without any kind of pomp or ceremony or anything. It just happens.
I definitely felt the pacing was a little weird with this, where like I felt like the match got off to a start where like literally what I wrote down was, man, the Dudley's heat is really wasted on these jabronis. Oh, never mind. They start doing cool shit.
It's good notes. Good notes.
But it is a thing where it's like the first little bit of the match is like you had the Dudleys like just come out and like work the crowd up into a frenzy, and all of that energy gets kind of sucked out of the room in the first like 2 minutes of the match, and they really have to fight to build back up to where they got to. And I think they did get back up there, but I also, yeah, I did think the finish was a little sudden. It didn't feel like it was like a proper kind of like crescendo.
I'd agree with that for sure. It was kind of flat a little bit, and especially after like a big spot, you know, and like, yeah, you know, I'm with Lauren, like seeing these like bigger dudes like doing this kind of athletic acrobatic kind of shit was like great. Like the high spots were great, but the ending again just kind of fell flat. It was still a good match. Like it was still a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And especially for like a moment as big as a title change, yeah, right? Is like the crowd was just kind of like, really? Okay. You know, like it didn't seem like the Eliminators were kind of as over as faces as the Dudley boys were as over as heels, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, they were like, we really hate these guys, but we're not sure if we want you to be the ones to beat them. how many bald heads would you give it?
I gave it 3.5, and I don't know if that's a little generous on my end, but I thought it was a fun match. I don't know. I get nostalgic for this stuff, and I was like kind of in it. So maybe a little home cooking there on the bald head, but I really like the match.
It's your rating system. You can do whatever you want.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks.
It's also just a good kind of like start to the night. ECW on pay-per-view, finally anything can happen, titles can change hands, like we're gonna you know, maybe it wasn't like the best sort of like beginning middle end match, but it was a great amuse-bouche for the show.
It was
right?
Entertaining.
Yeah,
get a nice little video promo of Sandman backstage.
He's so young, so handsome,
those baby blues, that mullet. They got Lust for Life by Iggy Pop playing, which was pretty good.
Yeah.
He looks like the preppy bully at a trailer park.
That's a great summary of the Sandman's look back in the day.
Yeah. We got Chris Candido cutting a promo in the ring. He's got a torn bicep and unfortunately cannot compete. Doing a good job, getting some good heat, you know? He's talking about, was he saying that he went over there and he's come back? So, you know, was that a stint in the WWF or was that in WCW?
Yeah, he was part of the Body Donnas in WWF. And
okay. Yeah, right, because he talks about WrestleMania, right?
He had a WrestleMania tag team title match back in the day. Came back, you know, home, but, you know, he can't even be part of the first pay-per-view. It's ridiculous, and he's having a little tantrum in the ring, and he's going off. It was a pretty good Candido promo. And, like, Candido is one of those heartbreaking situations where, you know, he passed away too young. Phenomenal talent in the ring, and he was like a work machine, right? So, Yeah, it would have been nice to see a Can't Do Joe match tonight.
No. What we get instead is Lance Storm with the best fucking rat tail I've ever seen.
Oh my god.
So dope. And it's bleached.
Yeah.
Yeah, bleach blonde.
It's so sick. And it's so funny to think of, like, current day curmudgeon, like, cranky old man Lance Storm with his, like, fucking haircut you could set your watch to. And he's like, these kids don't understand wrestling. And then you look at, like, Wild and Free Rat Tail, like, Outlaw Mud Show ECW Lance Storm. Like,
the whitest meat baby face in the world. He's like, I think, yeah, at one point he, like, clapped his hands and he, like, did the fist. He's like, come on. Come on. And he's like flexing and he's doing every cliche of like a baby face, and it was so rad because we know what Lance Storm is like, and it's like
yeah. And then his surprise opponent, we get RVD.
Hell yeah, baby.
RVD wearing sick, you know, green flames
yin yang
onesie with yin yangs on it, airbrushed.
Yep.
Looking sick. Looking really sick.
His butt's looking great too, eh?
Oh, yeah. Butt's He's always had a great butt. I think he has a great butt even to this day.
yeah. You and all seven of his girlfriends think that. Yeah. So.
Old bubble butt over there.
What ensues is a very fast-paced, sick match with like lots of big moves. It's sick.
This is like the progenitor of modern wrestling, as like anything that Absolutely. We watch now, you can almost trace directly back to this.
Well, this works very well for a modern lens. If you took this match and put it in right yeah. now, it would work. There's lots of flips, lots of moonsaults. It's really quick.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, it was awesome. And it's like RVD was, you know, I credit him at being like the innovator of that new style, like that, like everything that like Ricochet and like Osprey and everything, it can all be rooted back to like RVD, because really like nobody had ever seen anything like RVD before, right? And like his innovation, not only like kind of like in the ring and with the flips and like with the leg drops and all that shit, but like how he kind of incorporated like, you know, chairs and the guardrail and tables and shit like that, like it was so cool to watch back in the day because you'd never seen anything like it. And
there was a really funny part in this match where RVD, like kind of earlier in the match, he's like, he's not even necessarily like hitting Lance Storm with the chair, he's just kind of throwing a chair at Lance Storm.
Yep. Yeah, he does. And he hits it as he's running.
He hits Lance Storm with like two chair shots, and then Joey Styles says, you know, the thing about RVD is that he just has so many ways to hurt you. And then RVD just hits him with another chair shot. And it's like, really, really, Joey? Does he have so many ways? Or does he just hit people with chairs?
Like, I mean, he has so many ways to hit you with a chair.
Joey Styles does a really good job in this match. And like in general, though, like there's a part where RVD like jumps up onto the top rope and goes for kind of like a back elbow and he slips.
Yeah.
Like it's a very clear botch, but it's like Joey Styles kind of like, you know, he's like, oh, you know, like RVD, like he's, you know, slipped a little bit, like with these high flying maneuvers, it's a high risk, high reward, but still got a piece of it. You know, Lance Storm wasn't expecting it. He's a little staggered off balance. I thought he did a good job of kind of saving the botch through commentary instead of the like really going out of his way to be like, here's the psychology of what this guy was doing. Here's the psychology of why this guy is selling it. Instead of the like modern day like lazy of like didn't get all of it.
Like, yeah, no, I'm with it. And like Joey Styles is really good, and like I think he does good soloing, but he's really good playing off a Cyrus or a Joel Gertner or somebody like that. Mm. Like he's got that old like monsoon thing where he's just incredulous at kind of whatever the other person's saying. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's a disservice to put anyone on commentary by themselves, but he does a really, really good job by himself.
So, yeah.
We get so RVD starts taking a few chair shots to the head. He hits the Van Daminator and wins. Pretty solid match, man.
Pretty solid.
It's so sick. Yeah, I would say that, like, RVD doing all of these moves feels different. Like, I can tell that it's, like, the progenitor to what we see now, but it feels so raw because, I think, because he botches some of it, or, like, he doesn't fully land it, or he does it so fast. Like, he doesn't really look and, like, calculate, like, how he's gonna land it. It feels like he's doing it of the moment. I'm just like, I'm just gonna fucking try doing this, like, weird DDT off the apron. Like, all this weird shit. And it's, yeah, like, it's so visceral. Like, it's really exciting.
I noticed that as well with Sabu when we get to that match later. Of, like, it's, like, just get up there, do whatever fucking leg drop or whatever flip or whatever you're gonna do. Just, like, go for it. It's not so much the setup that you get now with guys doing, like, Phoenix splashes or shooting star presses. There's, like, it's kind of, there's a threshold, right? There's, like, a line of sort of, like, wow versus believability.
Yeah.
And I think there's totally room for your Ricochets and your Will Ospreys and for your guys who do kind of sacrifice a little bit of the believability to do just some fucking shit that is frankly unbelievable. That's fine, but it is really refreshing to go back and watch this and see sort of like, oh, there was a time where high flying did also look impactful.
That, and that's it. It's a believability, right? Like, it's like, it looks better if it's more raw and it's more like somebody can fuck up. But like Rob Van Dam, when he hits something, it's like he's hitting it with his whole damn body, and it's not like,
yeah,
you know, like, and some folks do that, like, but like, and again, like you said, there's a place for all of that, but just when things were a little grittier in general, I think I kind of miss that, you know, that wrestling. But, you know, you can never go back home, as they say.
Darby Allin does that.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think that's why Darby Allin is so over? Is because he does have that kind of devil may care, like, I'm just going to hit this whether you're there or not. It never seems like his opponent is ready to catch him the way that, like, you know.
Yeah, or, like, I love Phoenix to bits. He's, like, probably one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. But when he lands some of his moves, he lands on his feet and he lands lightly like a cat. Like, it is no fucking problem for him. Like, he just did a beautiful acrobatic flip and land like a fucking trapeze artist. Whereas, yeah,
he's so clean, right?
Yeah, it's, and that's what's so impressive and awesome, but it doesn't make you feel like, oh fuck, he fucked himself up. Like, he lands that shit beautifully almost every time. Almost every time. Whereas, like, Darby will just, like, crash and burn all the time.
Yeah.
Before we get too far away from this, how many bald heads do you give the RVD versus Lance Storm?
I gave it 3.75. I thought it was a fun match, nice. And both solid workers. And Lance Storm, I think we've been singing the praises of RVD all this match, but Lance Storm was excellent this match. He was on
point. He was awesome.
Quick as a hiccup. He's getting jumping up to the top rope, no problems, and he was clean. Yeah, Lance Storm was incredible in this match as well.
No, for sure. No. We get a little video promo of Terry Funk. Saying, you know, believe it or not, this might be the last match Terry Funk ever wrestled.
Is this his last stand, or will he be champion?
Yeah,
or will he wrestle for another 20 years?
Who can tell? Only time will say, Terry.
It's nothing is more fun than watching videos in the 90s of people being like, the storyline is that they're fucking old and over the hill then, and then realizing that they, like, you know, like, like watching Ric Flair matches and stuff where the storyline was that he was like, can he still do it? And he just had his last match this year.
Yep.
Always cracks me up. It's great. Yeah. That's, you know, I love professional wrestling. It's hilarious. Speaking of old guys,
I don't know.
Why?
They weren't old. I feel like they were pretty young and sprightly.
Well, Gran Hamada was 53.
That's exactly Terry Funk's age.
Yeah. Or wait, maybe he was like 40 something. Okay. I don't know. We got the Japanese match. We've got a 6-man tag match between the Great Sasuke, Gran Hamada, Masato Yakushiji replacing Gran Naniwa. versus Terry Boy, Dick Togo, and Taka Michinoku. So they're all coming from Michinoku Pro Wrestling. We've got Team Taka coming out in the BWO Japan gear. This is just great.
They are so over.
Good. Over like Rover. And like all you had to do back then, BWO was so funny because it was like, ah, ha, ha, they're making fun of the NWO. And like the NWO had like a Japan contingent. So they had like one of the BWO and the Takamichi Noku there. And it's like, it was funny watching this. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot this. The BWO was like so popular. And, like, the shirts came out, and then I think WCW tried to do either a cease or assist or, like, to sue them or something like that. And they couldn't because they were protected under parody law.
Yeah, which, parody's nuts law.
Which we all know, same law that Weird Al is protected under. So
yeah, great law. Huge fan. One of my favorite laws. I did think it was funny that it was, like, the guys wearing, like, the Hometown Hero BWO t-shirts when you got into the match. They were like, all right, now we're going to work heel. Like,
yeah, that's right. This match was sick, though. This was an awesome match.
I loved this match. Yeah,
it was so good.
Yeah, it was also very fast-paced and, like, very high energy. I think it starts off with BWO really dominating. And yeah, they're super working heel, which I think confuses the crowd because they're not ready for that. Gran Hamada gets in there and starts whipping people around so fast. And that was when I was like, how old is this motherfucker? And you were like, he's really fucking old. And I was like,
I looked it up. I think maybe at the time he was like 49, something like that, like approaching.
He
50.
Was so fast. I was wondering if we were watching the feed at like
1.25 speed.
Yeah.
Nope. He's
He was so fast.
Yeah. Credited as being the first Japanese professional wrestler to learn lucha libre, and he brought back the lucha libre style from Mexico to Japan.
Interesting. That's cool.
I love this match. I love that nobody in the entire show pronounces Sasuke the same way twice.
Yeah.
I do. It is cool that it's like, oh yeah, great Sasuke fought Jushin Thunder Liger at the Tokyo Dome last night and is like here doing this now. I was like, man, unreal.
Let him rest.
Insane. Yeah.
And like Sasuke fucking rocks too, man. Like, I love watching old, like, 90s Great Sasuke matches. Those are always super fun.
Do you know how old he was back around there in the ballpark?
No, I don't know. Sasuke? He didn't strike me as, like, that old.
I thought he was maybe a little older. Like, there were some spots in the match I was like, is he a little older? Like, it reminded me of watching some kind of modern-day Jushin matches, right? And I was like, could be a little slow down there, but he was awesome. Like, it was so good.
So
everybody
he was
so good.
He was born in 69, so he would have been coming up on, like, 30. He would have been just shy of 30.
Wow. Incredible. I did not know that. But yeah, like, I was really impressed. I don't know about you guys, but the trio's tag moves that they were doing in this match were fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Very
cool. I would say that BWO Japan had better combos, like better tag team moves together, and it was sick.
I think, yeah, any team that has like Taka Michinoku and Dick Togo is like probably going to be the better team. Like, I think it's one of those things that we kind of go back to when we're rewatching stuff like this, where if you recognize some names and you don't recognize other names, there's usually kind of a reason for that, you know? So it's like, even though like Dick Togo isn't
oh my god,
he's just like a heel manager now, right? He's not like necessarily remembered as like a great wrestler, but the fact that he has had like sort of longevity in his career, Taka Michinoku obviously has a great history versus like the other team where it's kind of like great Sasuke and like a couple dudes, is like I do think that there's a clear reason why Team Blue World Order, Japan, it sort of seems to have it a little bit more together than just like the other team, right?
Yeah, and they have a lot of charisma too, right? Like they're big, and like they're, even with their like kind of heelish, you know, triple team moves, they were a lot, I don't know, they were a lot more robust in kind of like their personalities, I think, than, you know, the other team. So it was like it was totally easy to like, easy to hate.
Yeah. What else was I looking at here? I do like that Joey Styles shouts out, and that new maneuver you're seeing there is called the Brain Buster, also known as the Michinoku Driver, which is not what a Michinoku Driver is now.
At all.
Yeah, I don't know. There's some like pretty fun stuff here. They hit the triple power bomb, looks really good.
Shield spot.
I did think that the Yakushiji, like that kid looked great. For kind of like the story that they were trying to tell of like super young, last minute addition to the team, but he's taken so much punishment, but he just won't go down. Like there was, again, you want to talk about like things that carry over in a modern wrestling sense. Not only did the pace of this, the high flying moves, the intensity of it, but the type of story that they were telling and the way that they told that story totally fits into like you could put this in any like AEW trios match and the story would hold up. Like
totally.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't know. You want to get to the bald head ratings on this?
Yeah, like great Sasuke pins Michinoku. I don't have much to say, but it's good. There's a little bit of fighting after the match, but it goes to nothing.
Yeah, it was a really fun, great, exciting. And again, it's always interesting to see who you can take from back then and plop into, like, I think AEW would probably be the best point of reference. But these guys for sure, RVD for sure. This match, I think, was my favorite match of the night. I gave it 3 7/8 bald heads.
I think this is a pretty clear like best match of the night. And the thing that this reminded me of the most, and something that I kind of want to, I have like an idea gestating for a future episode potentially, I don't know how we would go about this, but I love watching stuff like this. That is, last summer we did the Cobra Clutch like spring explosion checklist that I found on Instagram, which was just like a collection of a bunch of weird random matches. And I think one of my favorite matches on that was this like 6-man tag from AAA in like the 90s with like Psychosis and Heavy Metal and like just a bunch of like random dudes there. And it's like that kind of like really, really niche like Japanese and Mexican wrestling that is like the true kind of like groundwork, the true foundation of like what wrestling has become now, that it's like you know, so many people who are in wrestling now and so many people who are making it happen are like true like nerd scholar historians. I don't like, did you read that Eddie Kingston Players Tribune article where he talked about like going down to the street corner to like trade people for tapes of All Japan? Kind of stuff of like those things are like what influenced, I think, a lot of people to get like really, really into wrestling so much more than, you know, D-Generation X or the NWO or Stone Cold or The Rock. And I think those are the types of matches that if you go back and watch that, and they're harder to find, and it is a little bit closer to that kind of like, you got to dig for it. Maybe not necessarily tape trade, but it's not going to be on Daily Motion the way that, you know, this was on Daily Motion. And like those are kind of matches, and like that's those are like countries and eras of wrestling that I'm really, really interested and intrigued by and want to check out a little bit more on the pod.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you brought up a good point there. So I think if you look at like DX or Stone Cold or The Rock, they were good for pulling in general public, right? Like the general, like, you know, like more mainstream, more kind of like easy to digest. But like anybody who caught the bug and like was really interested went down these holes, right? And they did find that
exactly
stuff, like, you know what I mean? And like the ECWs and the All Japans and the New Japans and like the FMW at the time, it was just like It was so, once you got hooked on it, there's so much more to explore, and it's like that's the coolest thing about it. But like, and I think that's kind of it, right? Like, I think, you know, if everybody talks about ratings all the time, yeah, there's no Rock, there's no Stone Cold, there's no DX, there's like, there's not all these things, but the hardcore stuck around, and like, you know, we're hooked for life. And I don't think that it's the same anymore, because all the stuff that you used to have to dig for is just available on TV. So if you like it, you like it, and it's there, right?
Yeah. Got the finishing out our trifecta of backstage video promos. We got Big Stevie Cool.
Richards.
Yeah. This was a little confusing, because he does this whole promo where he's like, I don't want to be a joke. I want to be considered a serious contender. I'm not Big Stevie Cool. I'm Stevie Richards. And then in like 20 minutes when he does his entrance and the Blue Meanie's there being like, whoa.
We're taking over. And then he does like the Nash fist thing. It's like, all right.
Yeah. Definitely for me, like, I don't know who Steve Richards is. So like, when I saw this promo, I was like, oh, he's like a moody, dark, like introspective man. Like he like, it seemed like a really edgy, moody promo. And then when he came out and I was like, oh, he's part of BWO. Oh, he's the head of BWO, and he's just like ridiculous. It was so like dissonant for me. I was like, why did he do this weird promo? Like, I guess it's because he's a babyface, and that's like how you do a babyface promo at the time, is just be like really intense and like, but
That's an interesting story, the idea of like, we've been the jokers, we've been the guys who are like just known for monkeying around and parodying these other wrestlers, but I want to show that I have what it takes, and I want to show that I can be the guy.
Very John Silver-esque.
It's a great story. The problem is, I think they recorded this video promo like 3 weeks earlier and then forgot about it by the time the pay-per-view hit. So that when he did his entrance, they were just like, yeah, yeah, go out and do the dancing around, the BWO shit.
Like, Stevie Richards was always good, though. So, like, Lauren, you may remember him from Right to Censor. I'm not sure if you remember that.
I remember Right to Censor and the irritating siren and the sick, tough lady like Miss Trenchball.
So he was the leader of Right to Censor, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's who that is. But yeah, it was kind of weird, and it was kind of like, if you're gonna go all in like that, you know, maybe have a little bit more serious of a presentation. But BWO was a merch mover, right? So you don't want to kill that cash cow.
One of the things he talks about is how when he was young, he was like making a face promo about like, I never used to fit in, man. Like, I was never the cool kid. I always had to go to the movies. I couldn't get a date. I had to go to the movies by myself. So fucking weird.
Nerd.
What a huge nerd.
Who goes to the movies by themselves? What a nerd.
And all the nerds in the audience were like, yeah, woo, we do that.
I did that too. I saw Spider-Man by myself. Anyway.
Last year, though, right?
Yeah, last year during the pandemic. It was only because it was a pandemic that I went alone. That's it. I have friends.
I wasn't much cooler. When I was that age, I like went to the movies and saw Phantom of the Opera with my same friend like 4 times, or like Ghost Rider 4 times.
Yeah, I saw Ghost Rider 3 times in theaters.
Yeah.
That's sick, though. Can't dunk on that.
Oh, dude.
On that.
Yeah, it's awesome. A cool movie. I stand by it. Next up, we got Shane Douglas versus Pitbull number 2 for the ECW Television Championship.
Why couldn't they deign to give these two men distinctive names? Why is it Pitbull number 1 and Pitbull number 2? It seems so mean.
Well, it's because their tag team name is the Pitbulls.
I know, but they surely are men.
No, it's also because one of them only pees and one of them only poops. So.
What the fuck? Oh my god!
I think it's weird because he just like, I think Gary Wolf's one of them, and for the life of me, I couldn't tell you the other guy's name. But like, yeah, like I don't know. Like the Pitbulls were like always fairly generic in the ECW world. Like they had a big kind of run before I started watching ECW, so I never was really attached. But I thought the video package leading up to this was fucking awesome. Like the story behind this match is fucking insane.
They set the stage. They set the stage very well.
Yeah.
Did I miss it? Tell me about it.
Well, was that like Shane Douglas like broke Pitbull number one's neck?
Oh yeah.
And Pitbull number two was coming for revenge, and you had,
and Shane Douglas is like, "I'm gonna break your neck like I broke that guy's neck."
Yeah, and it's like Shane Douglas's entrance with like the riot cops and Francine and the whole like the franchise. Just phenomenal. All of the pieces were in the exact right positions.
Well, and the big part of the story that we missed, though, is that, like, so he broke his neck, and then, like, he came in, like, he was beating up Pitbull number two, and then Pitbull number one with the halo on. So he's got the full gear, like the halo with, like, the metal thing attached to his head, attached to the shoulder. And he gets in the ring, and he's trying to stop Shane Douglas. And Shane Douglas, like, starts shaking the halo and, like, throws him down on the ground. And, like, the entire locker room empties out to, like, try to get at Shane Douglas. And, like, Shane Douglas, like, there's a fan cam following him to the back. You know, it's like, it's like chasing. And, like, all, like, you see, like, Taz. You see, like, you know, Paul Lee. Like, everybody's trying to get at Shane Douglas. And then he gets into a car, and he, like, bolts it out of the arena. So he's got the riot cops as protection. So the whole ECW roster doesn't get at him. So anyway, that was just
the presentation around Shane Douglas is great. Every ECW show that we've watched that he's been a part of, it's a thing where I'm like, this is a guy who you know, maybe hasn't kind of like stood the test of time the way that like a Taz or the way that people know like Sabu and RVD, but he or Bam Bam Bigelow or whatever, like, but he's a really, like, seems to be a really, really integral kind of part of the kind of history of ECW. Totally. And because of that, I want to put the blame for this match entirely on Pitbull number two, because this match had all the hype, it had all the story, and they fucked it all up. This match stinks. It's so bad, stunk
like shit. This is a bad match. And like Shane was working this match too, like he was doing a lot of work. And like, you know, there's a guardrail spot where he goes to the outside, he grabs the guardrail, throws it in the ring, and then like, you know, they tussle around that, and then they throw it out, and then like Shane Douglas just like dumps out Pitbull number two, and then picks up the guardrail in the ring and throws it on him. And it's like insane spot. Like, but like Pitbull number two is just doing shoulder blocks. He's doing like really lazy work the entire match. And again, no offense, but it seemed kind of phoned in for him. And Shane Douglas was working his fucking ass off this entire match.
There's like the end of the match is like 5 minutes of false finishes that get no reaction from the crowd.
Yeah.
Like, it's like even the people there didn't give a, they were like, we don't care who wins at all, we just want it to be over. They were more invested in chanting he's got herpes and she's a crack whore. So
whoa, I missed that one.
Yeah,
classic ECW stuff there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the best match. Douglas repeatedly tries to break Pitbull number two's neck, and the fight spills into the crowd, and then Pitbull number one, who is in the crowd in the front row with a neck brace on, gets involved, and his neck brace just completely falls off, like, immediately, and he's just doing wrestling moves like it's nothing. And then Shane Douglas drops a guardrail onto Pitbull. And then Francine hands something to Douglas. And I think it's brass knuckles, but it's unclear. And Douglas hits him with a piece of the table. So there's a kick out.
No.
And then there's a chair shot. And then there's a kick out. And then he hits him with the ring bell. And there's a kick out.
Yeah.
And then what ends the match? It's like he uses the championship belt and that's going to be effective.
No.
But no, it wasn't even that either. So this man is impervious to guardrail, table, chair, ring bell, championship belt. What gets him? A suplex.
Yeah. A belly-to-belly suplex gets him in the end. And it's like, it just this weird, over-the-head, regular-looking, run-of-the-mill fucking board-ass suplex that gets him.
I think we're supposed to believe that it's like all of those things combined, and it's just the cherry on top is the suplex. But wow, what a fucking bad call, especially with Francine handing him the fucking
the foreign object.
It's like that's the move. Why you need like all of these foreign objects in ECW where foreign objects don't fucking matter.
but that was the other thing that kind of annoyed me about this match, is that like he had a chain in his boot. You remember that? Like, and he was like undoing his
laces. He spent so long trying to get the chain out of the boot. That spot was awful.
I must have missed that.
It was
how
terrible.
Could you possibly
but like why are you sneaking in a chain in an Extreme Rules match, which all matches in ECW are, and why is Francine like sneakily trying to pass him off? Like, just give it to him. Like, you know,
hand him a gun.
Like, just give him the fucking thing, or like, don't hide it in your boot that you have to take fucking 3 minutes to undo your laces to get to. It was just, it was silly, right? Like, and again, I just make it make sense to me. Why would you do this? Why? You know?
No.
Like, at the end of the day, this podcast only recognizes one Pitbull, and it ain't Pitbull 1, and it ain't Pitbull 2. It's Pitbull 305, fucking Fireball, fucking Dale, Mr. Worldwide, me not working hard, picture that with a Kodak.
Hell yeah, baby.
Bald King.
That should be the song for this episode. Should be the like I remember everything.
Yeah,
it's in there.
Yeah,
yeah, that one.
How many? Speaking of our Bald King, Mr. Worldwide, how many bald heads you give this match?
Pu stinky 2.5 bald heads. This stunk like poop. And the only thing that saved it a little bit was Shane Douglas in this match. Douglas worked his butt off. It would have got way worse than that if it was Pitbull number 2 against some other schmuck, but.
and then there's a whole bunch of shit that happens after.
Yeah, some fucking guy in Rick Rude's robe wearing a lucha mask comes out.
Yeah, and everyone's like, it's gotta be Rick Rude. He's wearing Rick Rude's robe. Yeah. It's him. It's Rick Rude. And then he like walks right up to Francine and like kisses her.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's unmasked and you're like, oh no, it's not Rick Rude. And
but then
to me, it's just an unknown long-haired old man.
Yeah.
I don't know who it is. But Rick Rude's right there with him. So, like, yeah. I guess, I don't know. He's just right there. And Francine's supposed to be, like, kind of into it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, she liked that.
And she passed out. You remember after the kiss, she passed out on the mat.
Yeah.
Like, she was, like, totally, like, oh.
That's the way.
But then, like, Rick Rude actually comes in. He's got the motorcycle helmet and the leather jacket. If you recall, One Night Stand, Edge wearing the exact same thing when he speared John Cena. A little bit of a throwback to the first ECW pay-per-view.
Whoa, no way.
So
that's
nice. The only reason that I remember that is because isn't that what Chelsea Green wore when she helped out Matt Cardona at that GCW pay-per-view?
That's cool. What a great legacy that began here with Barely Legal.
That would be a great Halloween costume, is leather, like leather trench coat and motorcycle helmet. And you can be, when people ask you your Halloween costume, you're like, oh, I'm actually dressed as three wrestlers at the same time.
Yeah.
But
I'm just an intruder.
Yeah.
I'm ready. I'm getting ready for my run-in later tonight.
See that guy over there dressed as John Cena? Ooh, boy.
Motherfuckers in trouble over there. You better not set up a table in the corner.
Yeah. Okay, so then there's a Taz promo where he's got like,
this Taz promo fucking rocks. Yeah. It's so good.
He has like a linen hood.
It's a towel.
It's like
It's a towel.
So like rustic. It looks like a monk's robe.
Lauren.
It's all black.
It's a towel.
It's a shitty towel if it's a towel. I have to say. It's like a shitty towel.
It's a shitty
They
towel,
gotta buy this man a new towel. Does he like, is it his towel from when he's fucking 3 years old? Like his good luck towel? They gotta get him a fresh fucking towel.
I love this promo where he's like, Sabu should fear me. Like, oh, I'm gonna make you tap out. Is like,
all of that was really good. I thought his final like parting words were like kind of effective, but also kind of like, for me, I just like grammatically, I was just like, that's dumb. But what he finishes with, he goes, Sabu, if I was you, I wouldn't be.
Sick. That's and I was dog just on like, the streets of Red Hook, Lauren.
The fuck does he mean by that? It's such a funny thing to say.
If I were you, I wouldn't be. That's sick, man.
Is it?
That's some cold-blooded shit.
I don't know.
It sounds good, right?
I think it's the conviction, but yeah. All right, so then we got Taz versus Sabu.
The grudge match of the century is what it is announced as. I did think it was... So, like, Taz is supposed to be the heel here, right? He comes out with the whole Team Taz. He comes out with Bill Alfonso. He's got the whole, like, entrance. I did think it was, like, a little weird to give the heel the, like, video promo beforehand, but not the face. Because I was like, I don't know what Sabu's skin in the game is.
Also, Sabu doesn't even enter. He's just in the ring.
He just shows up.
Well, it's kind of rude. I would argue this is one piece of good ECW booking for the night, because he had that kind of, you know, promo before. He's supposed to be the heel, but you're foreshadowing to make Taz sympathetic.
Yeah,
right? By the end of it, right? So
yeah.
you're
planting seeds. So I think ECW did an all right job with this one, and Taz is like, this was like rooted. I think Taz was the Taz Maniac a year earlier. And he just kind of got into this thing. But, like, Taz was the fucking man in ECW, man. Like, he was, like, the dude. He was so good. Talking, you know, like, just suplexes, throwing stuff. Yeah, drag. I'm doing the taffy thing right now, Lauren. What do you got on Taz?
Well, yeah. I mean, Taz is super cool, but to me, he's, like, one of those people where he is more charisma and like character than he is wrestling, and I feel like this is because I'm like a dumbo who likes showy big flippy flips. Sure. But to me, I'm like, oh, he's like very just like, he just does holds, like he just does mat based wrestling, which to me, I'm like, boo, that's kind of boring. But I can see how like to everyone else it's like, that's so cool, he's like so legit, and like, I don't know.
Yeah, it was kind of like the shooter style. Like, he was like the first kind of shooter wrestler that made it big, because it was like, he was billed as such a tough guy, right? He was like, and his suplexes were fucking sick as hell.
Oh, his suplexes are phenomenal. I'm not trying to minimize them.
Yeah, and he's built like a little refrigerator, like a mini fridge, you know? Yeah. Well, this little tough guy running around. And it was believable back in the day, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, this guy, you know, this guy could probably go with, like, a Hulk Hogan. You don't want to let him into WWF. He could probably run through the entire roster. This guy, he's a legitimate tough guy, this one.
A brick of a Daniel Bryan with his submissions and shit.
He looks unstoppable at the start of this match, man.
Yeah, like, no, he's running shit.
This match kicks off, and it has such a big fight feel in the way that I don't think anything up until this point on the card has felt like a big deal.
For sure, it felt like the main event to me.
Totally. And Taz comes out just fucking, like, annihilated. Like, they make this 5'8" man look like a monster heel. You know, like, it's like, how is Sabu gonna get anything in against this guy? He's like, he's too tough to take strikes. He's too, like, you know, grounded to be knocked off his feet by high flying moves. You can't out grapple him. You can't out submit him. Like, he's just like, you know, indomitable.
He's a human suplex machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the tagline. That was the tagline. Someone says human suplex machine versus the human highlight reel.
I was thinking about that. When we were watching this, I was like, if you reduce your fractions, does that just make it the suplex machine versus the highlight reel?
Yes.
Like, that's like
human,
when...
Human?
When they used to call Finn Balor an extraordinary man who does ordinary things. Or extra, what? They said he's an extraordinary man who does extraordinary things. And it's like, that just makes him a man who does things.
No, it doesn't.
Anyway.
Sabu gets busted open super early too, which helps visuals, like, on him. Like,
yeah.
Like,
yes.
Has, like,
he breaks his nose.
He breaks his nose, like, at the beginning of the match.
Like, in the first 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It looks terrible. Like, I mean, it looks great, but it looks so painful.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's some shit in here where it's just like, because once they start getting into Sabu, kind of like breaks his nose and then like immediately fires up and he starts getting some shit in, right?
And yeah, he does an amazing jump from the ring to the crowd.
Totally. They do some really fun stuff here where it's like, because like Sabu's whole thing is that he's like, I'm going to set up a chair and I'm going to sort of like jump off the chair onto the ropes, blah, blah, blah. And they play with that in a really fun way where it's like Sabu sets up the chair. He goes for a jump and Taz counters it and just fucking throws Sabu into the chair that he set up.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's spots in this and there's psychology and there's storytelling. And there's like, this match has it all, baby. It's great.
Great match. Great match. This is so much fun. And again, seeing these two kind of like newly established, like on the rise, right? In ECW. And like, they're going to be legends and forever associated not only with each other but with the ECW brand, and this is the kickoff for it. This is their big introduction to the world on pay-per-view, right? So very cool to see. And like, this was like perfect Taz and perfect Sabu, this match. They, you know, they got the table spot on the outside between the guardrail and the ring. That spot was gnarly as fuck, and nobody takes a table like Sabu. I don't know who you are or what generation it is. Sabu still takes the best fucking table.
I think, was that the one where, like, Sabu tries to, like...
He tries to go for the DDT and he just kind of puts himself through the
table? Yeah, Taz is just like, no, and he just doesn't move. And
hey, are you seeing how low my center of gravity is?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me, bro?
Yeah.
And then Taz does, like, a ton of Taz plexes.
Every Tazplex in the book, a T-bone Tazplex, a belly-to-belly Tazplex, a belly-to-back Tazplex, a Northern Lights Tazplex, you know, that's all the Tazplexes I can name off the top of my head.
I think that's basically the end of the match. He does, like, a ton of Tazplexes.
Well, no, we get the spot where, like, Sabu tries to lock in the Taz mission, which
yeah.
is, because that's the whole thing where they're talking about, they're like, if Taz gets this in, it's over, no one gets out of that, and Sabu locks it in. And Taz manages to kind of like power out of it, which just, you know, I love guys doing other guys' finishers.
Yeah.
And then Taz locks in the Taz mission and it's done.
Yeah, Sabu passes out.
And Joey Styles typing it up is like, this move has been banned in judo, but it's not banned
here.
It's
yeah.
Like, it's yes. awesome. Oh, it's dope. So good.
It's dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, I guess let's get the bald head rating for this one and then we'll talk about what Taz says after.
Yep.
Yeah so Taz gets the big dub here. Fun stuff in this match. I gave it 3¾ bald heads. It was a very good very fun match.
It's engaging the whole way through. Two absolute star making performances. Like, this is a thing that, like, this is how you do like, you know, neither guy looks bad in this match. Sabu doesn't look any worse losing this match than if he had won, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's really good to see this is building a company. This is like, you know, moves for the future instead of moves for the now, right? Taz shakes Sabu's hand. He says, you know, like,
I'm going to cut a promo right now.
Yeah.
This doesn't make me soft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to shake your hand. I respect you, Sabu.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he offers him like a chance to fight him again at any time. Like, he's like,
you took me to my limit
match.
And I would be honored for you to take me to my limit again.
Yeah.
It's great.
They hug. The crowd is booing this.
Yeah, someone in the crowd's probably like, gay!
No, they were booing before. But then RVD runs out and attacks Taz. Mm-hmm. RVD and Sabu are tag team partners. And so then Sabu is like, yo, what the fuck is happening? And he kind of like takes him to the side and they're conferring. And he kind of turns RVD's back to Taz. And Taz is like lying on the ground recovering. And to me, when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, Sabu purposefully turned RVD around so that he couldn't see Taz coming up behind him. Mm-hmm. This is like Sabu siding with Taz because they just had that lovely hug moment. And RVD just did a dumb thing by running out and surprising him. And so Sabu is like, fuck that. But no. What happens is Taz gets up, he attacks RVD, and then Sabu comes to RVD's rescue and starts attacking Taz, and then they beat the fuck out of Taz.
Yep.
And then Bill Alfonso gets in the ring and takes off his t-shirt to reveal another t-shirt. And it's right, a fucking Sabu t-shirt.
Which is the ultimate heel move. If you're doing a heel turn, you unbutton it, and then guess what? It's the other guy's shirt.
Yeah. He was wearing it all along.
I really liked this. The performance of this heel turn is great because it's a thing of like RVD coming out to support his boy, Taz getting angry at that and attacking RVD, Sabu being like, I don't necessarily want to fight Taz, but I got to stick up for RVD. There's shades of gray throughout all of this where like while you're watching it unfold, you're like, it's all just a big misunderstanding. Like, why can't we all just get along? And then you have that moment where Bill Alfonso takes off the shirt and he's wearing a Sabu shirt. And you're like, these motherfuckers. Like, because it's a thing where it's like, it's not even just like that it's a heel turn, but it's a heel turn in which I gave them the benefit of the doubt.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's a heel turn where I was like, maybe nobody's the bad guy. And then it turns out that no, they are the bad guy. And I'm a rube. And that makes me hate them so much more. It's great. Yeah.
That's pro wrestling. Yeah. Feeling like a rube is the best feeling in the world, right?
It's perfect. Like,
they actually got one over on us.
Yeah.
I love getting worked.
It's like that kind of like, it takes a little bit of extra time, but that is so much better than just like, they do a beatdown and then, you know, Bill Alfonso comes in and like maybe also kicks Taz. Like, is so much less imaginative and less like fulfilling and rewarding. You don't get the same heat. From if they had just attacked Taz and then Bill Alfonso attacked Taz, which is like kind of a more, you know, like if we look at like Dominic turning, like, or like even more recently, right? Dominic Mysterio turning on Rey and Edge, where there's no like point where there is a surprise. Oh, he's bad, because they don't give you that moment to play in the space of like, maybe he's good and just lashing out. Maybe it's not what it. I like this a lot. It was really good.
It was really good. Really fun. And then Bill Alfonso, Sabu, and RVD went off to have an incredible run as a unit, right?
Yeah.
So.
If you say so. Okay.
I am saying so. It's the truth, Laura.
So then Tommy Dreamer comes out to join commentary, accompanied by Beulah, who the crowd loves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of awoogas from the crowd, a lot of whistles.
Awooga.
I was doing that thing I invented.
Yeah, the glasses.
The old glasses, yep.
Tommy Dreamer does like a fine job on commentary. He does a great job selling the stakes of this match coming up, because he's a huge fan of Terry Funk and really puts over Terry Funk as saying like, Terry Funk is like my father. No, and
Terry Funk is my dad.
My father!
Yeah, it was, I think like Terry Funk trained him. He was like his hero. Like, Tommy's really selling, and I'm sure it's the truth, right? Like, Tommy Dreamer's a very emotional, kind of sentimental guy, so he was the perfect guy. And, like, Tommy Dreamer, I think the penultimate baby face of ECW, right? Like, the guy of ECW. But, like, he had to get the buy-in from the hardcore crowd at some point.
Right.
And I think at this point he had just got that after the Raven feud and the lashings and all that stuff. So
mm-hmm.
very hot, white hot babyface Tommy Dreamer.
Yeah. We got the three-way dance. We have Stevie Richards versus the Sandman versus Terry Funk. The winner gets to face Raven immediately afterwards for the ECW heavyweight title.
Brutal.
Let's talk about the greatest entrance in wrestling history.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
This Stevie Sandman Richards entrance.
Comes out. Oh. Yeah.
This Sandman entrance is the best. This is better than Stone Cold's entrance. This is better than, like, you give me anybody. The only thing that is comparable, and I love that it is, like, there is a direct one-to-one straight line between the Sandman and Nick fucking Gage, both coming out to Metallica, just, like, yep. rocking through the crowd. But the Sandman did it first, and the Sandman did it better.
Better. And like, the only, like, this Sandman entrance, I would say, just comes a little short to the One Night Stand Sandman entrance when he sure. comes through the crowd, which is, to me, the coolest and will always be the coolest entrance of all time. That is the best entrance of all time. End of story. Yeah.
There's something about this Sandman entrance that is like, it's the I'm sure I've made this like reference before, but it's like the demo tape version of your favorite song. You know, yeah. where it's like, because like the one night stand is like great because like everybody is so fucking up for it, and like the crowd is nuts, and it's the Hammerstein Ballroom, and it's like a huge audience, but it's like it's so clearly when you watch it, just like it's a recreation of this exact entrance, and there's something that is like a little bit more raw and a little bit more. He doesn't have the balconies to walk through; he's just circling the ring, yeah. and he does the kind of like he steps to the one side. And then he steps to the other side, and then he goes back, and then he, you know, and he's just pouring the beers out and smashing them on his head. And he's got the dart.
Yeah, he's like Terry offers.
Funk. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Oh, no, you do it.
But like, yeah, like, you know, he like offers Terry Funk a beer, and then Terry Funk's like, no, I'm here to wrestle.
I like, couldn't possibly.
And he's like, fuck it. Then he like chugs the beer and then spits it in Stevie Richards' face.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
so
also,
good.
Fucking Terry Funk comes out to Desperado, which
yeah.
is such a perfect choice for like his entrance song in this context.
Yeah.
I feel like the crowd kind of doesn't like get it and doesn't like hit on it quite as much. Like, it's a thing where it's like, if this was like a GCW crowd now, that like some old fucking guy should come out to Desperado at GCW, because that is a great entrance song for a real, you know, speaking of Ghost Rider, a real Sam Elliott one last ride.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, like, honestly, I think Eddie Kingston should come out to it.
Okay.
Because he's always wearing the Funk U, you know, like,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
But. If he ever does a GCW show up, he should come out to that.
He should come out to the Johnny Cash version of Desperado, though.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a bad idea.
No. Do we talk about the match?
Yeah.
One of the things that they say on commentary is that Tommy Dreamer, like when he's saying like, oh, it's hard for me to watch this match because I love Terry Funk so much and he's my dad. They say something like he gave up his spot in this match to let Terry Funk fight. And it's like something they just say on commentary and they don't say in any of the like promo packages or anything. And it seemed like so weird. So it's like Tommy Dreamer was supposed to be in this match and he's like, you know what, Terry Funk, you do it. Like, that's weird.
No?
Weird storyline. Anyway, no one knows anymore. Okay. yeah, they get like ladders involved in this match, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first things that happens is Sandman throws a ladder into the ring, like just from the outside, he just tosses it in and it hits Terry yeah. Funk right on the fucking head.
Yep.
It's so funny how Terry Funk sells too. He's always like yeah. like waving his arms around and he's like flopping around the ring. I don't know if like you saw it, but like with the ladder, there's one point where like the ladder hits him and he's selling and his head goes in the middle of the ladder And then you mess up at the ladder service.
I know. I was trying to be like, oh my god, this idiot. Oh no. He's like, he's fucked up. He doesn't know what's happening. And then I realized I was like, oh, he knows exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
He knows all the moves. Dude,
it's a very endearing match for Terry Funk. It's a thing where it's like, I haven't watched a whole lot of Funk matches. We watched his barbed wire death match with Mick Foley. He's a guy that I just like, kind of in the same way like as Eddie Kingston, where I'm just like, oh, I get it. He's the everyman. He's the guy who's just out there doing it. Yeah. And I don't think this match was great, but it really gave me an appreciation for like why people hold Terry Funk in such high regard. Mm-hmm. I think specifically revolving around the ladder, there were a lot of like very good spots on paper. There was a lot of, they conceptualized a lot of really cool things that could happen with the ladder, and then they tried to execute those spots, and like very, very awkward chemistry in this match, I think.
Like, I was a little confused at some points. Like, so I think our idea of a triple threat match now is one fall to the finish, right?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. I know exactly where you're going with this.
And I was watching at some points, and like Terry Funk would pin them, and Sandman's just like looking at him. And there's so many spots like this where they're just watching
the pin
without breaking it up. And I'm like,
what? And then eventually they're working together. And pinning together. And I was like, the fuck are you, what are you fuckers doing? Like, who will win?
Both, like, at separate points, both Terry Funk and the Sandman do like a combo move with Stevie Richards, and then they let Stevie Richards go for the pin and just kind of sit back and chill. And I was like, "What are you doing, man?" Like,
there was one spot I just want to bring up quick where so Stevie Richards goes to Sandman while Terry Funk's down, and he's like, "Oh yeah, like give me like a back suplex, but then like drop me on Terry Funk for a leg drop."
Yeah,
and he's like, okay. All right, and he does it. And then he gets up and he's like, okay, let's do that one more time. And Sandman's like, all right. And he picks him up and then he drops him for a back suplex. So that I thought was genius, right? Like he totally turned on him. Fun match.
So it is revealed that it is an elimination match.
Yep.
When it's Stevie Richards gets eliminated, right? And you just have Sandman and Terry Funk. And then, like, this is the part where the match gets fucking crazy. Because I think at the start of the match, it was you have two brawlers and a guy who's actually good at wrestling. And then you get the guy who's good at wrestling out of the match and everything goes fucking crazy. Yeah. Because it just ends up with, like, Sandman wrapping barbed wire around himself to like splash Terry Funk in the corner.
Yeah.
And like there's a whipping spot that is the most disgusting thing I've ever seen.
It's so gross, and like the blood on the back is so bad.
Yeah. But it's just watching Terry Funk like whips Sandman with the barbed wire. And when he pulls it back, it gets stuck, and he has to rip it out of the Sandman.
Ugh.
Fuck.
Yeah. Not cool.
It's so gross, but it's also fucking kind of cool.
It's a little cool. I'm usually not one for blood and gore, but I don't know. Like, and like Terry Funk, he bleeds. He's on the same level as Ric Flair, the way that he bleeds. And it's just... it's ridiculous. And he, like, the blood coming out of his head, he looked like he was dying in the ring.
Yeah. And I was like, I couldn't figure out how it happened, too. I was just like, he's all of a sudden he is bleeding profusely. Like, his lifeblood is coming out. Like, it's like his essence.
At 53 years of age, hits a fucking moonsault. And it's not a great moonsault, but he's 53 goddamn years old.
And he's bleeding his life force out.
And you're damn right that's the finish to the match. Fucking right it is.
It's awesome.
It's sick.
It's such a good... this match goes from, like, kind of a triple threat clusterfuck without a whole lot of chemistry to, like, one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Yeah. And like, I think Stevie Richards is a great wrestler. I just think he was, you know, the wrong guy in the wrong match. Because it's like, really, you only need these two guys wailing on each other to give me exactly what I need for this. So Terry Funk wins. How many bald heads do you get? Like, are we, is this all one match or?
This is okay. All one match.
It's all one match. Okay. Damn.
This is a gauntlet match. This is one match.
Whoa. Okay. Okay. That's not how I did it. That's interesting. Okay. So then Raven immediately just appears in the ring.
Well, Raven comes out and he comes out to come out and play by the Offspring. Not a bad choice. Maybe not the best. I don't know. I think there's other songs that Raven could have come out to that would have been better, but
it's still a good song. Like, I agree with you. If you really want to kind of get in there as a broody, but I mean, like, for the times, that made sense. It was a cool song he could come out to, probably.
Yeah, I just if we're going like '90s, like punk,
like mid '90s, that works.
I mean, here's the thing: is that when it comes to the Offspring, it's mid '90s with emphasis on the mid. You know what I mean?
You burnt.
Yeah. And then Raven just starts fucking kicking Terry Funk's ass so much.
Just so much. He looks like he's
tables.
Dying. Like, he looked like he was dying at the end of the last match. He definitely looked like he was dying in this match.
Mm-hmm. And then
Terry's going nuts. Like,
Tommy... This is my favorite part where Tommy Dreamer says, like, Joey Styles tries to throw it over to Tommy Dreamer, and Tommy Dreamer's like, I'm just trying to focus on what's going on right now. Yeah. I need you to not talk to me. And it, like, is, like, objectively horrible commentary, but puts over the stakes of the match and much.
It works better because of the finish being what it was. Like, it would be one thing if he was just sitting on commentary the whole time and just being like,
yeah,
I can't talk about this. I have to watch in silence. It would be annoying, but because the match ends the way it does and he gets involved in the way that he does, it makes sense that he's, like, so invested and he's like, I just need to watch silently. Yep. Like, yeah.
And then
Raven's posse gets involved.
Raven's nest.
His nest.
Different than the Raven's flock from WCW. This is
Raven's right. Nest. Yeah. So it's his nest. So they attack Funk.
Reggie, someone hits a really bad powerbomb on Terry Funk.
I didn't recognize any of these people. I was like, this is before my time, I guess. And I guess these people didn't stick around too long in the nest. But
yeah, it sounds like they flew the coop, huh? But then Big Dick Dudley attacks Tommy Dreamer up on the commentary stage,
mm-hmm.
the proverbial Dario Cueto's office roof, if you will.
So like Dreamer is distracted and he gets attacked from behind,
Big Dick Dudley.
A Big Dick Dudley. Okay.
Big Dick Dudley.
But that's different than Bubba Ray Dudley, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And he attacks...
Bubba Ray is known as Medium Dick Dudley.
So he attacks Tommy Dreamer, but Tommy Dreamer like whips around and he's able to just fling this guy off of the like commentary riser onto this table down below.
He did not catch enough of those tables, man. Like...
No, at all. At all. That could be the story of ECW. Did not get enough of those stables, man.
Didn't get all of it.
Yeah, definitely. He did not.
But then it's also, so like while this is happening, Raven attacks the ref. Like Raven hits the ref with a fucking DDT.
Huge, like, that was when I knew he was up to no good.
Yeah, and then Tommy Dreamer runs into the ring and DDTs Raven. And then there's like a weird botched count. Where like
this sucked right at the very end, they botch it.
Ugh. Yeah, like they ring the bell, but the ref is like, no, and Terry Funk says, "Hey, fuck you,"
and like pins, and then rolls him up.
Yeah, rolls him up, and the ref counts it properly, and Terry Funk wins the title. This is the most buck wild, just like bonkers, crazy town banana pants fucking shit I've ever seen in wrestling.
But I was so invested in Terry Funk at the end of it.
You know totally. I mean?
Like, and I'm the same where I haven't watched a lot of Terry Funk. Like, you know, like obviously stuff with like, you know, Jerry Lawler and like all the big hits mm-hmm. I've seen. But man, he's so everyman and he's so perfect and he's so Eddie Kingston, like you said, right? Like he's just that guy that you just yeah. like, I want this guy to win against all odds. You know, he looks like he's dying, but I just want him to throw a punch or
yeah.
Even at 53, which yeah. is a thing that is like, I wouldn't say that about Ric Flair. I wouldn't say that about The Undertaker. There's not a whole lot of guys. The only other person that I want to see wrestle at like 53 years old is Minoru Suzuki. Right.
Yeah.
And it's a thing where it's like, and I don't want to see Minoru Suzuki win titles. I just want to see him like fucking beat people up. But it's like, this was a gratifying for someone who went into this not knowing that Terry Funk was in the main event, not really knowing a whole lot about Terry Funk at all. This was like, I felt good. I felt fulfilled. I was like, man, ECW did right by me.
Yeah.
In 1997.
1,000%. 1,000%.
How many bald heads do you give this insane two matches that is kind of one match?
The total package, I gave 3¾ bald heads. I thought this was
okay.
A lot of fun, feel good. It's like about a moment too, right? Like I believed, like, I was in it. Like I was really, yeah. I was bought into this match so much and like maybe all the moves weren't there and maybe there's some fucked up shit that happened. But like, this was a really good wrestling psychology getting me invested kind of match, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was there for it. I thought this was really fun.
No,
yeah, for sure. I loved it.
No.
It was emotional,
and it's the like, because we didn't really talk about like the whole like commentary being like Raven is the like, oh, the odds always seem to be stacked in Raven's favor, right? He gets to yeah. fight these three men have been at war with each other, and now he gets to fight the bloodied, desecrated corpse of a 53-year-old man who just had to wow. beat two other guys, and now Raven's coming out to fight him. And yeah. it's like not only is Terry Funk old as hell, but it's like underdog story on top of underdog story. Yeah. And it's a convincing kind of win that doesn't necessarily make Raven look bad for being beaten by an old guy who has already had a match.
Yeah.
Everybody looks good coming out of this. It's great. I like this pay-per-view a lot. I do, for all its like kind of, you know, rough edges, maybe like some crowd chants and stuff that don't hold up too well. I do, every time we go back to ECW, I kind of get it a little bit more.
It also, like, I don't think it was like a super short pay-per-view. But it doesn't drag. Like, it doesn't feel long at all.
It flows so well.
Yeah, which I appreciate.
It's fun. It's fun about ECW because they even found, like, Paul Heyman was a genius in that he was, like, he isolated what worked. And he just kind of incorporated that more and more as ECW went along, right? So, like, the flowing of the matches, like, one match would end, they'd flow into another one. Bringing in talent from overseas and like, you know, not knowns from North America. He did like so much work that was just so good and really kind of like, he just like hardened that fan base and like made them so loyal to the ECW brand. And just like, it was fan service, right? He just kept on doing fan service and he just seen what was working. And I just, it's so neat to see this back, you know, with my eyes now, and like be like, yeah, this is the start of it all, right?
No. We like to close things off. We're doing high spots and botch spots. So a little honorable mention to something that you loved the most, a little honorable mention to something that you loved the least. Lauren wants to go. She's ready.
I am ready. So my, okay, I'm gonna do this in this order. My botch spot,
mm-hmm.
I think predictably for both of you probably, is when Tommy Dreamer comes to the commentary table. He's accompanied by Beulah, crowd's really excited to see her. They start whistling and they start chanting. What do they chant? We love you, Beulah. No, they chant.
They chant, we respect you as a woman and as a individual.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want with your body.
Clap, 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 clap.
Show your tits. Yeah. Is what they chant. And it's a bummer.
Yeah.
That's it. And she doesn't say anything. She just sits down at commentary and that's it. And it just feels so shitty that they're screaming that out.
She also, it's like, because this is also kind of, this is my botch spot as well.
Okay.
It would be slightly more forgivable if she said anything on commentary for the entire two matches that she was there. They gave her a headset.
Did they?
There is footage of her with a headset on, and she doesn't say anything.
Nothing.
The entire time.
The entire time.
It's a real, like, you know, you could have some kind of, like, as the company, you could be like, well, like, we did use her in this role that, like, it wasn't, but it was like, they really did just kind of parade her up there for a bunch of dudes to chant, show your tits.
Yeah.
And that was, like, very much 90s wrestling. And it's like, it's great that, like, we've come so far. And we're not there anymore. But it's like, it's wild to look back at that and be like, this is what the crowd expects. This is like what everybody signed on for. And it's just, we've come so far and it's so nice to see that we're not in 90s women's wrestling anymore, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That being said, my high spot is when Shane Douglas comes out accompanied by Francine,
mm-hmm.
and Joey Styles on commentary screams, look at that shameless hussy. That's my high spot because it was fucking hilarious. So, you know, we can contain multitudes.
Joey Styles just being incredulous all the time.
Oh, that's great. My high spot was the I already said that the Japanese six-man tag was my favorite match on the card. I think that was the best match. That was not my high spot, though. I think what I was talking about earlier, where I was like, is ECW that good? The way that people talk about ECW, is it just nostalgia? Is it just because you had to go back and like find the tapes in order to watch it? Is it, do people love it because it was hard to acquire and they built it up? And I think when I was watching this whole show, it was the thing where I was like, this is pretty good. Maybe this match isn't so good. This is fine. And then when you got to that main event and it was like the drama and the run-ins and the run-ins that didn't feel like kind of like a, like an overbooked Cody Rhodes run-in, like it was run-ins that heightened the stakes, made things more exciting, and the way that it finished and that moment that you got of Terry Funk fucking covered in blood, holding that title, falling over like head over heels into the crowd of people adoring him. And that like the like genuine kind of like elation that I felt watching it was a thing where I was like, yeah, ECW is that fucking good. The way that people talk about it and the way that people remember it is fucking accurate. It is like that match, that finish was 100% the thing that like sold me on, you know, like, yeah, this is what people think it is.
Yeah. And that storytelling was done almost exclusively in ring. Like, I know there was a promo for Terry Funk and
you could turn this on at the start of the three-way dance,
mm-hmm.
and watch to the end and understand every single piece of nuance in that story.
Yeah. And as somebody who doesn't know a lot of the like context or history of like Terry Funk or like any of these other characters, like I know Raven is in stuff, but like I was going into it cold, as I always am because I'm a dumbo, but like I was also fully bought in and fully invested in Terry Funk winning, so that's like a testament to the beautiful storytelling in ring.
Yeah
I think you two kind of summed it up perfectly. That was my high spot as well, that kind of moment, that ECW magic that they created by storytelling in the ring, truly like kind of against all odds, kind of. And Terry Funk's so wonderful, but I think that whole moment and that whole match is really, if you want to put that into time capsule, that's ECW, right? Like, that's, you can look back on that match in, you know, 10, 50, 100 years and get an idea of what ECW is kind of all about. Botch spot, it's got to be, like, again, I want to be different. Obviously, the stuff with Bulow is terrible. To be different, I'm going to say people sneaking around foreign objects really doesn't make any fucking sense to me. And the more I thought about it over the course of this podcast, the more angry I got about it. Like, why? Like, what are you doing? Like, ECW goes from, they're figuring it out, I guess. They go from these high highs to low lows. Like, it's just like, stupid referee shit and like all this. It's always going to bother me. I'm sorry, but dumb as shit to be sneaking stuff in your boot. Why are you sneaking in your boot? Just put it in your trunks. Yeah. Wear it around your neck as a necklace, you know?
Yeah.
Just walk into the ring holding it.
Yeah. Holding it. Or like, you know, like, yeah, whatever. Like, just like, just have it easily accessible and be like, I'm grabbing this now. It's fine.
Yeah.
I think that about does it.
Yeah.
Looks like there's been enough talk. If you got any thoughts on ECW Barely Illegal or got some other cool ECW shit for us to check out, you can hit us up on the socials. We're at facebook.com/stonecoldshots. Instagram, Twitter, Stone Cold Shots Pod, Stone Cold Shots Podcast.
We would really appreciate if you left us a rating and or a review on your podcasting app of choice.
Slap down that five bald heads.
All right. We'll see you guys in a couple of weeks for something fun. Something spooky? No, it's too early to be spooky. Yeah. That's got to be later.
Just something different.
The unstoppable march of time is spooky enough.
Yeah. Maybe that's what's going to be really spooky, is that it's like, surprise, it's Halloween now. Boo!
Is there any such thing as like a birthday episode? We should have done like something birthday related. Like, is there a birthday wrestling show?
Well, Josh shares a birthday with Jim Cornette, so we could do the Jim Cornette career retrospective.
No,
we're just gonna review Jim Cornette podcasts.
Motherfucker,
Kenny Olivier, you fucking piece of shit.
Bye.